Imagine yourself sat down, surrounded by all your gear, alone on a tropical beach, close to a native village, while the dinghy which brought you sails away out of sight. Now imagine you look down that beach and see a man. He sat behind a desk wearing a tweed suit. Is that a microphone? You head over to investigate, and you realize he's narrating what you're doing. Hi, that's me. This is Notes from the Field Desk. Why don't you grab a seat, I guess on the sand. I'd offer you a chair, but honestly, getting this one here was hard enough. It's a good one though, it's got lumbar support. I insisted on it. I said, if I'm going to be sat behind a desk on a tropical island for months, you better believe I'm having lumbar support. The guys on the fishing boat didn't find that funny. You should have seen their faces when they saw the desk. Oh, I seem to be sinking into the sand. Would you just mind if... Yeah, hold on. Okay, that should do it. Transport and sinking aside, it's a pretty good office, right? I know you can see it, but do you mind if I just describe it for the benefit of the tape? I'm sat on Maliyu Island, just off the coast of Papua New Guinea. We're at the northwest shoreline. It's early morning, the sun is still rising. Looking out over the bay, the lightly rippled sea shimmers in a thousand tints, caught briefly on its continuously moving surface. In shallow spots, amid turquoise vegetation, you see rich purple stones overgrown with weeds. Where the water is smooth, unruffled by wind, the sky and land are reflected in colours ranging from sapphire to the milky pink shadows of the mist-enveloped coastline. I know what you're thinking. Why the desk? I actually think this is my stroke of genius. I was talking to my supervisor, Susan, and she told me there's this debate in anthropology about the separation between field and desk. You know anthropology. We're like sociologists who like travel and hate maths. Just so you know, in academic circles, that joke kills. Anyway, apparently there's loads of articles about how anthropologists go to the field and they meet all the people, then they go back to their desks in the universities and libraries and whatever, and then they write things that don't relate to the people they met, which makes going in the first place kind of pointless. At least, I think that's what they were getting at. I sort of skimmed them, and they seemed to fit with this other idea of mine, so I just ran with it. My main idea was that I'd recreate the research of the first anthropologist. Sort of a peer review. What did he get right? What did he get wrong? So I'm recreating Argonauts of the Western Pacific by Malinowski. There were others before him. Some old English blokes called Taylor and Fraser. Some people even say this Greek guy, Herodotus, was the first, but Malinowski was the first one to get the travel bit down. Before him, most of these guys relied on reports they got from colonial officers or missionaries, or even worse, amateurs, usually wealthy people running around writing nonsense. Nowadays, we'd call Taylor and Fraser armchair anthropologists, taking the observations done by others and theorizing about it. Also known as philosophers, am I right? Okay, not a joke fan, noted. Malinowski thought that the studies done before him were theoretically strong, but the data unscientifically gathered. To successfully study the other, you had to go and live with them and see the world through their eyes. If you lived with them and participated in their community, you could make objective observations about how their society worked. He said this becoming native was key to achieving objectivity, and the way you achieved it was by staying in the field for at least a year. The problem of early anthropology was people not leaving their desks to collect data, and the problem of modern anthropology is people leaving the field and forgetting everything. So I thought, two birds, one stone, I'll bring the desk to the field. Oh, you were wondering about the tweed suit on a tropical island. Well, okay. In scientific studies, you control for the variables, right? If I want to see the Trobriand Islands, like Malinowski did, I need to recreate his experience. He was a bit of a posho, and in the photos he wore this weird colonial outfit. You know the one I'm talking about, you've seen it in pictures, white, weird helmet, all that jazz. And I couldn't find any of those, but I figured this would do just as well. Same deal with my travel route. I flew to Brisbane. It's not clear whether he did that, I mean probably not, but we'll say Brisbane's the starting point. I sailed up the coast from there to Cairns, and from there we chartered a boat to Papua New Guinea. I'm not really a big boat guy, and it was a lot longer than I was expecting, so I was sick most of the way. But good news, so was Malinowski, so we'll just count that as scientific accuracy. We arrived pretty late in Port Moresby, the capital of Papua New Guinea. Malinowski doesn't describe it, but to be honest, I was a bit disappointed. It's a massive city. I was sort of hoping to be far flung, you know, cut off from civilization the way Malinowski says I should be. I knew this was a risk though. In the intro to Argonauts, Malinowski mentions that even back then in 1915, native communities were melting away. I tried to put my disappointment aside. After all, this wasn't my final destination, and look at this. I mean, pretty cut off, right? I took a car the following morning down the coast to Diba. I know that's not how he would have done it, but I couldn't find a boat willing to take me and the desk. At Diba, I managed to bribe my way onto a fishing boat, and now I'm here. I know it's not really the Trobriand Islands, but Malinowski hung around here and Moresby for a while, and with the desk, this is kind of as far as I could get. I have now, in the words of Malinowski, spread my nets in the correct place. So, I guess it's just time to wait and see what falls into them. How did you get here? That sounds a lot faster, probably, yeah. Okay, well, seems like no one's coming. So, let's go over some theory in the meantime. Don't whine. I'll keep it light. You can paddle in the sea while I talk. It's mostly for my notes anyway. Malinowski was a functionalist, which means he thought all our social behaviour was an extension of our physical needs. He argued that thinking about it this way, you can understand any behaviour, however strange, by understanding what need it filled. Example, magic, weird, right? Malinowski said, no, it's a response to emotional distress. When something bad happens that you can't explain, it's comforting to fill that void with magic. Malinowski says that's why magic persists in modern society. So it's like when you've had a shit month and you say it's because Mercury's in retrograde. It feels comforting, even if you don't fully believe it. This doesn't just happen after the fact. Participating in magic can make us feel like we're in control of the future too, which is helpful because the future is strange and scary. So that's like, next month Mercury's in retrograde, get the incense ready. Remember that guy Fraser? Yeah, so this is basically his theory. He said most people realize that they aren't powerful enough to control nature, so they ask higher powers to help. Malinowski loved Fraser, total fanboy. Used to carry his book around. He said it was the only joy in his life when he was a student. So it's not surprising that he borrows a lot of his ideas. That other guy, Taylor, he would say that we've advanced as a society beyond the need for magic. Through industrialization, we can control nature. any magical belief left over in a society was just a survival. It used to serve a useful function, but now it doesn't. It's just a silly ornament that we should throw out. So for him, imagine a Twitter atheist bro.
Horoscopes are stupid. Haven't you heard of this thing called science?
Malinowski was not so much a fan of Taylor. He said, no, Taylor, you dummy. Society is functional. How can there be any social behaviour that doesn't serve a function? It doesn't make sense. He said, what's more likely is the function probably just changed to serve a different purpose. I have no evidence they actually ever talked to each other, by the way, but that's how I imagine it. Despite that little spat, they all basically agreed to an evolutionary perspective. The less advanced societies are what our society used to look like in the past. By studying other people, maybe it can help us to understand weird things we do now. I'm here to take an objective look at Malinowski's objective look. 100 years ago, he was on the Trobriand Islands. So now they should look kind of like the UK did in 1920? I suppose that big city at Port Moresby was a good sign they were right. Oh shit. I'm actually late to teach my tutorial. It's okay, I'm just going to Skype in. In the meantime, why don't you listen to this recording I made of a passage from Argonauts? The goal is, briefly, to grasp the native's point of view, his relation to life, to realise his vision of the world. We have to study man, and we must study what concerns him most intimately. That is, the hold which life has on him. In each culture, the values are slightly different. People aspire after different aims, follow different impulses, yearn after different forms of happiness. In each culture, we find different institutions in which man pursues his life interests, different customs by which he satisfies his aspirations, different codes of law and morality which reward his virtues or punish his defections. To study the institutions, customs, and codes without understanding the desires and feelings of these people is, in my opinion, to miss the greatest reward which we can hope to obtain from study of man. These generalities the reader will find illustrated in the following chapters. We shall see there the savage striving to satisfy certain aspirations, to attain his type of value, to follow his line of social ambition. We shall see him led onto perilous and difficult enterprises by a tradition of magical and heroic exploits. Shall see him following the lure of his own romances. Perhaps, as we read the account of these remote customs, there may emerge a feeling of solidarity with the endeavours and ambitions of these natives. Perhaps man's mentality will be revealed to us and brought near, along some lines we have never followed before. Perhaps, through realising human nature in a shape very distant and foreign to us, we shall shed some light on our own. In this, and in this case only, we shall be justified in feeling that it has been worth our while to understand these natives, their institutions and customs. Well, that was an interesting tutorial. In the end, we talked a lot about Malinowski's diaries rather than Argonauts. They were published in 67, a while after he died, and in part that's probably to protect his reputation, as it turns out. To be honest, I hadn't read them in depth, but my students said they show he was kind of a racist. I mean, more like he was a racist throughout. He curses the Trobriand Islanders. He calls them lazy and stupid. Also, it seems like throughout his research, he was bribing the islanders with tobacco so that they would dance or do magic or, you know, just include him. Not exactly the native he claimed he was. All comes across very unscientific. But I said to them, I said, this is just his diary, his private thoughts. I'm sure when he went to the field, he was able to set aside his personal prejudice and carry out good research. They didn't agree. First, they said objectivity wasn't possible because people know they're being watched and that changes things. They gave this example from Argonauts. in the inside cover, there's a picture. And it's got this caption: a ceremonial act of Kula. A shell necklace is being offered to a Trobriand chief. Behind the guy presenting the necklace is a row of six bowing boys. One of them is sounding a conch. All the figures stand in profile, their attention apparently concentrated on the rite of exchange. But if you look again, you see one of the Trobrinders is looking at the camera. To be honest, when you look at the other pictures, Malinowski does look awkward, out of place. Hardly a member of the community, and Malinowski definitely skewed the results with those bribes. Oh, shit. Sorry, the tide is coming in and the waves are now washing onto my brogues. And would you mind helping me shift the desk a bit further up the beach? Yeah, I'll just take my headphones out. Give me a sec. Yeah. Thanks, mate. Where was I? Right. Secondly, they said Malinowski was wrong. Those colonial officers and missionaries, it wasn't that they couldn't be objective because they weren't scientists, but because nobody's objective. We've all got baggage, you know, things that have happened to us that make us think in a certain way. Malinowski couldn't just leave his racism in the diary because it affected the way he thought about everything. They said, when you claim something is objectively true, you're really making a claim about authority. Remember before how we were talking about the evolutionary stuff? They said that it's based on an assumption that European civilization was the peak of human society, and everything else is on that same track, aiming to become that. They said that's what colonialism was. British people going around the world claiming that they were the height of civilization, so they should be in charge. If they were in charge, they'd make everything better. They'd make them like themselves. They called that the white man's burden. So not the students, colonial officers. What Malinowski's diary proved was that he was just as prejudiced. Just as guilty of this way of thinking. He saw them as savages and backwards, less evolved. And that wasn't just his private opinion, that formed the basis of his theories. I said, look, if you choose to ignore one of the founding fathers of anthropology, isn't that just cancel culture? They groaned at that. One of them said, when you cancel someone, you're really just challenging the authority of their statements and actions. When Malinowski was cancelled, it challenged the authority of colonial racism within anthropology. Even if he only thought in private that the Trobriand Islanders were lesser, it still affected how he treated them and described them. The same way it affected colonial officers. That's why anthropology is suspicious of objectivity. Because objectivity is a claim to an unchallenged authority. This is true because it's objective, because I'm trained and I can see it. In other words, arriving as an anthropologist and claiming to be able to understand someone else's society objectively because you're so transcendent and you're a scientist from the West was like saying, I'm big and you're small, I'm smart and you're dumb, and there's nothing you can do about it. You sort of stumped me. At the end there, I couldn't really follow. It made me feel really hurt. I said, if that's all true, and I'm replicating his work, then how am I different from Malinowski? Am I a racist? Got a bit awkward after that. Still, I think there's some merit to what I'm doing. I'm not a racist, so I can see the flaws in Malinowski's work. Society's still advanced in some way, right? So I'll just see how things have changed. Have they become like us or something else? I told them I'd carry on and I'd prove that I could be objective. Anyway, it's a lot to think about. Shit, sorry, that's me, hold on. Hello? Hey, Susan. Right. No, I just did the tutorial. Oh, yeah, that. Yeah. Okay, well. Yeah, I know. No, I didn't do an ethics form. Yeah. Well, I thought, in keeping with the whole, you know, replicating Malinowski, seeing as he got money from the government to do his research and sort of give information to the colonial government, I thought, you know, I'd get some money from the Home Office. That's what I did. Yeah, my dad works there. Yeah. Well, what does that mean? Okay, sorry. Alright, yeah, I'll do that. Okay, bye. Apparently the students have complained. And Susan has reminded me that my contract requires I teach the tutorials in person. That this fieldwork was not cleared and that I haven't done an ethics form. Further, she reminded me that the department does not subscribe to a teleological perspective. And I asked what that meant, and she said, do some fucking reading for once. Still, Malinowski teaches us a lot, I think. Fieldwork is still really important in anthropology. You gotta go and talk to the people and understand their perspective. That's his lasting legacy, more than the theoretical work. Plus, I suppose the diary teaches us that we should keep an eye on our assumptions. And remember that no matter what we do, like bringing a desk to the field, we always sneak into our work. So maybe we should just be upfront about that. So would you mind helping me to carry this desk to that village? I need to get back or I'm going to get fired.
Three, two, one. I never asked you before. What are you doing here? What? It's disgusting. Well, no, I still need your help.
This was Notes from the Field Desk, written by me, James McGrail. This episode references Clifford James, 1983, On Ethnographic Authority. Roald Dahl, Matilda, published by Jonathan Cape, in 1988. Malinowski, Argonauts of the Western Pacific, published in 1922. Malinowski, 1948, Magic, Science and Religion, that was published in 1948. Malinowski, 1967, with introduction by Raymond Firth, A Diary in the Strictest Sense of the Term, from 1967. Edward Tyler, 1871, Primitive Culture. Young, Michael, Malinowski, An Odyssey of an Anthropologist, published in 2004. The sounds were taken from Free Sound. If you can donate to them, you totally should. I wouldn't be able to make this podcast without them. The sounds were Water Lap by Snog, Sand Slipping Out of a Shovel Slowly by XVXY8, Tropical Ocean Waves, Mau Mau Beach by Tom Benedict, Tropical Island by Rich Wise. The theme was Dark Side of My Students, posted by Mia Stawerski, created by Tadosu Mawerski. For full links, you can follow us on Twitter at Notes From TFD or at Notes From TFD on Instagram.